But there is a movement because of the demand of the people, because we now have such a strong voice and can point out when story worlds don't seem to make sense, or when the voices of the characters that we love are not consistent in the games and books and comics and TV shows that we love. We can complain about it, and the studios have just started to hear about this. And so comes the rise of the transmedia producer, the keeper of the canon, someone who absorbs not just all of the details and chronologies of these story worlds, but who also works directly with the visionary of these story worlds, the James Camerons of the world, and comes to fundamentally understand the meaning, the archetypes, the aspirational drivers of these story worlds. In the business realm, we call this the brand essence, so that we can make sure that that is inserted into the content that is being produced across different media platforms. That's transmedia storytelling, not the repetition of the same story over and over again on different platforms, but the proliferation of story worlds across those media. So we've seen that in movies, video games, and television shows. But what's fascinating, what I think we're going to talk a little bit about today, is the fact that publishing is waking up, or maybe just opening its eyes a little bit, to the potential of transmedia storytelling. And we're going to talk about why that's a good thing, and why, if there are aspiring writers and storytellers and transmedia producers in this room, why this can provide the most accessible way to begin to think about a career in transmedia for yourself. So I'm going to introduce the people on the panel to let you know. We brought a few people from Starlight Runner and somebody fairly important from a big publisher to give you various insights and aspects of what this process is like. And we want you to be very candid with your questions. We want to involve you in this discussion as well, so that you walk away with a true sense of the nuts and bolts of how this sort of thing can work. And of course, you can ask questions about anything that we've worked on in the past as well. These include projects like Pirates of the Caribbean, Tron Legacy, Halo, The Amazing Spider-Man, Men in Black. A real array of projects that we've worked on. So I'm going to start from all the way over there.
Speaking of Men in Black.
Thanks.
Tell us who you are.
I'm Mark Pensavalli, COO of Starlight Runner Entertainment. Basically make the trains run for the company, and trying to handle the different types of deals that we encounter, because what we're doing is so odd, and people don't understand basically what we want to do in each for each different type of medium. So it's different from film, it's different from games, it's different from publishing, and you have to come up with almost a different business model and contract and deal for each individual situation, plus paying the bills.
Mark, tell us, from what business did you come from to join Starlight Runner?
Well, interesting. I originally was managing indie rock bands in the 90s, so I'll deny any story that you may come up with.
There's no Facebook yet.
But to make to pay the rent, I was working in publishing, actually. And I spent 8 years at HarperCollins, and then I spent another 7 years at Random House. And I'm interested in this because back then there was no interest, and the word transmedia didn't even exist, but there was no interest at all in two things. Combining two elements together, with if it was a book and or a CD that disc thing inside a book, or even e-books was looked down upon in the late 90s in publishing. It was known as, it was never going to happen. It was,
say it? Just PDFs is really well.
So I left publishing in 2000 and started running with Jeff and Crisula because out of frustration. And then we circle back, and now we're working with this gentleman to reestablish how, or establish how, transmedia can effectively work within the publishing world.
All right, I'm going to skip Chip for a second because we're leaving for last, and go to Crisula.
Hi, I'm Crisula. I'm the creative director at Starlight Runner. I started out, well, I went to college to study fine arts, and while I was in college, my first job, oddly enough, was in construction. Construction and demolition. And I had to manage all these, like, you know, big guys. A lot of them were ex-cons, and so I dealt with a really tough crowd. And then, that wasn't my thing. I wasn't interested in that. And then somehow, I got into comic books, and I started doing coloring, and I worked with a lot of amazing people, very creative people, and I loved it. I loved the work. And I continued doing that. And then after a while, Jeff and I decided to start Starlight Runner Entertainment. And basically, we were doing a lot of comic book coloring and a lot of various entertainment stuff. And slowly, it started to form into the transmedia company that it now has become. And every project is very different. There are amazing projects that we work on. It never gets boring. It's always interesting. And we meet fascinating people.
There you go.
Fabian Nicieza, I'm Chief Innovation Officer at Starlight Runner, lead writer, and edit the other writers' work as well. I've been a writer in the comic book industry for 25 years.
X-Men, Robin, Spider-Man, every character you could think of has been written by, what's that?
Billions of comics.
Oh, it's up to billions now? They raise the number every time we do any kind of a public presentation. It'll be trillions at the afternoon panel.
And Chip.
Chip Brown, my background is not, I mean, it's interesting, publishing is the oldest medium, I guess, besides oral storytelling. And so I went backwards through different media. I've worked in film and TV and animation and live theater, and got into print publishing about 8 or 9 years ago. For me, it's been frustrating too. I mean, I think, I worked at Disney three different times, and, you know, maybe the word synergy was born there. And so synergy can either mean, you know, fire people to save money, and so you can share back office functions, or it can mean try to have whatever this part of the company is doing match up with that and get more value, like in-kind advertising and things. But at the end of the day, corporate cousins just look after whatever their P&L is. So if, it's sometimes easier to construct multiple media, pervasive story world through deals rather than vertical integration, because if you can find some people with a similar goal, then, as you say, it's like every deal's a little different, but the thing that was interesting to me about publishing was that it's like, if you want to break into transmedia, right, be a writer, because you don't have to rely on anybody but yourself and maybe the power to or you don't need that. They still have typewriters, right? And so publishing is, if you can get, you know, a publisher to align with your idea, then, but you can have a vision for what the whole thing can look like, then it's better than a letter of intent from some uncle somewhere working in New York or L.A., and then you can take that to the next, you know, studio or network or whatever. So I'm excited to work with these guys. And so we've got a lot of vision and some very specific things that are on the front burner that you'll hear about soon. But that's who I am, what I do. And so I'm at HarperCollins Christian Publishing, which is Zondervan and Thomas Nelson, the two leading publishing houses in Christian publishing. And so I do have some personal observations about, there is a literary property that's thousands of years old that is transmedia, and so there's that Hollywood is taking an interest in now. So being the number one publisher of that literary property, the Bible, there's a lot of opportunity to create story worlds in a variety of media. So we're looking at a lot of that stuff.
Chip, when you say the Bible is a transmedia property, what do you mean by that?
Well, it's written over 1,500 years in three different languages on three different continents with 40 writers, 66 books, and yet there's a harmonized meta-narrative through the whole thing. And there's, you know, more characters than any story world that anybody else that we all fancy have ever created. And in terms of inviting the reader into the story, I mean, the tradition goes back before we even had a printing press, and even before, I mean, the King James version of the Bible is the first one in the English language. That's 402 years old. And the latest book was written 1,500 years ago. So, close to 2,000 years ago. So, it's every Sunday people are exegeting parts of that meta-narrative, and one out of three people on this planet self-identify as Christians at some level. I mean, they self-identify, so they're checking some census. 78.4% of the people in this country self-identify as Christians. So as I think that's why Hollywood's realizing there's a market, and it's ebbs and flows, so there'll be a Passion of the Christ that Mel Gibson did with his own money, and then all of a sudden everybody wants to do that stuff, and then it's kind of gone away. And you have your little Duck Dynasty things that pop up that play to that culture, but right now you've got the Burnett Show that now they've moved, you know, they did very well, and then it's moved to NBC. You've got the Duck Dynasty type things. You've got American Bible Challenge, which is kind of right on the nose as kind of a game show or a reality show. And then a lot of feature films. And so, a lot of feature films as well from people like Steven Spielberg and Darren Aronofsky. So it's a great transmedia literary property and also a great business to be in.
All right, okay. So what I want to do with the balance of the time is kind of track a little bit our experience at Starlight Runner with intellectual property and how ultimately that has led us to publishing as a solution for some of the problems that we faced in terms of getting our own dreams to come true as opposed to working for other people. We're hired, work for hire, by movie studios and video game companies and so forth. And that means that we get to play in the most fabulous sandboxes in the universe, whether that's been Fabian working at Marvel or us collectively working with James Cameron on the world of Pandora and so forth. The first time that we got to invent a universe, a story world that moved across different platforms whole cloth, was for a toy company. Fabe, can you tell us a little bit about what that process was like and what yielded from it?
We actually started a lot of the work we do. This thing's working? Is it working? My voice carries anyway. We were hired by Mattel to work on the Hot Wheels toy brand. They had a 35th anniversary coming up, 2002, right? Was when we were first brought on. And Jeff had the idea of developing story for Hot Wheels, which frankly had not really been done, I believe, since the 60s when a comic book and a cartoon had been done. They just didn't put characters in the cars, you know, mostly because they're really tiny little characters that fit in cars. And Jeff had the idea that we can create a story world that the cars can operate in. That story world would actually really help enhance the interest on the part of the consumer in wanting to learn more about the different cars. And at the end of the day, the company's interest is selling more toy cars. That's the end goal. So the question is, how do you use narrative and storytelling to help that company sell more cars? And do it in a positive way, and have fun with it at the same time. That's the best kind of collision of all different aspects of business and art. Jeff wanted to use the best means possible to get to the consumer with that story world. And originally they were talking to us about doing some website-related material. Jeff pitched something grander and bigger, which to everyone's incredible surprise, Mattel said yes, and it ended up becoming kind of a steamroller that they weren't ready for. Because everything we did, and I'm going to tell you what we did in about a year's worth of time. Jeff said, you got the best possible vehicle, no pun intended, for pushing a story world, and that's your JPEG car on a toy shelf, sitting there on a hook. How about if we do a little mini comic inside each toy? There's 35 different cars in the toy line, so we have this great big story world in mind. Let's do individual stories of each of the drivers and each of the cars, and that will tell a self-contained little story in 8 pages, but it'll also be part of a much, much bigger story world, because the race that we're talking about is going in and out of dimensions and on Earth and off Earth, so it was going to be kind of really stepping up everything that Hot Wheels did. It was easy for Jeff to say that, because then he said, Fade, can you write 35 self-contained stories that tell an individual part of a larger story world? And as is my stupid want to do, I said, yeah, sure, we can do that. So we did it. And that also turned into the story world that was developed into the video game that Mattel did based on the Hot Wheels world race. It also turned into a 5-part animated series that Mainframe Entertainment and Mattel worked on, which we were the story editors on, and we co-wrote one of the episodes, which also then was kind of adapted into a single DVD of that animated series. It sold about 12 million copies, I think it sold. Toy sales for the year plus increased and made Mattel over $200 million. All right, Transmedia. And they continued to reiterate the world race story world several times. Actually, it's resting right now, I believe. But they did like 4 or 5 different versions. We just went to San Diego a few years ago, and we walked past the Mattel booth, and there's characters we created standing there like in a mock-up toy display. So, which made us really, really happy. Mattel got a lot out of what we did for them. We honestly didn't get enough, but what we did get is proof of concept right off the bat.
Yeah.
So it made it so much easier for us to go to the Hollywood studios, and a lot of these companies don't bite. They're afraid. You got to spend money to make money, and you're spending it in a way that is not necessarily guaranteed to drive their core platform. In the case of the Mattel stuff, it did, but a Hollywood studio spending money to create prequel story material before their movie comes out in order to inform fans of their story world, they get really antsy about that. They want to lean toward more traditional marketing. So then something like Pacific Rim happens, where too much of the audience doesn't know enough about these characters going into the story world, and the audience isn't set up to go enjoy the movie because the story world itself hasn't been explained.
That's right.
And they do that, right? They say, well, how much does it cost? And then they go, well, that's, you know, 3 more billboards in L.A., so we should probably do the billboards.
Yeah.
Now, here we have a situation where how often does even a professional writer, a professional creator, get to invent something whole cloth? Fabian got a taste of that in the 90s because he was the co-creator of Deadpool, who you're seeing every 10 square feet upstairs. And for Hot Wheels, we got to create all of those characters and all of those storylines, an entire story world, just on the basis of a die-cast metal bunch of cars. But that taste of real invention, we haven't had very much of that taste since at Starlight Runner. We've plunged into the Hollywood worlds and things like that. Talk to us, Mark, about the highs and lows of that taste, and what is it that we desire? What is it that we want to do as creators?
When we started the company,
come close to the mic.
Sorry. When we started the company, I'm not a storyteller. I have stories in my head. I can't. It doesn't go to my fingers. I can't put it on paper. But I know what I like, and I know what I like to see, and I know what I like to read, and I know what I like to hear, especially in music. So storytelling was always the key factor for Starlight Runner. It was kind of sad that our first taste that Jeff's talking about was our first one out of the gate, because we were spoiled. So we said, this is going to be pretty easy. It's not easy. It's not easy at all. So we had to change the business model a little bit so that we would service Hollywood and video game companies to help them with their stories. And we were at a time where people were still saying to us, well, bring us a script and we'll look at it, and or bring us a manuscript and we'll look at it. And they weren't believing in what we were doing as transmedia producers. The word wasn't even around then, cross-platform, whatever you want to call it. But we had this vision in our head, and people were not grabbing onto it. So we stopped, to a certain degree, pushing. And we said, we're going to go with a proof of concept, which will be Hot Wheels, but then move into the other Hollywood studios, helping them out, and video game companies, and so forth. And we continued to do that. And it was kind of a low, but it was exciting because we were working on these huge projects. I mean, it's awesome to sit across from James Cameron and have him yell at me. We would say we were kids.
That's not awesome.
It's kind of awesome. I mean, you know, we're two guys.
Awesome. It is awesome.
You know, we grew up as guys in Flushing, Queens, and now James Cameron is yelling at me. And that's it.
He didn't yell at us for a while either. We were waiting for him to yell.
Yeah. No, it took a while.
We had to annoy him a lot.
But he understood what we do as a company. And we were hired by Fox to work on Avatar. But our marching orders were given by James Cameron, because Fox hired us as a marketing arm, which we really did not enjoy doing, but we did it because they paid well.
That's where the company's budget is coming from. Their expenditure is coming from the marketing end. We always wanted it to come from the production end.
Right.
But yeah, it is frustrating for artists, but all they know is that it is accounting. Right. So is this a plant cost that we amortize as we go through the windows of theater, DVD, VOD, and all that stuff? So if it doesn't fit in that stuff, then it's just a marketing expense,
right.
and that's it. You know, but it doesn't mean that it can't be art. It just means that they have no widget to sell.
Exactly. But that was the moment when we were no longer considered an expense; we were considered an investment. James Cameron made that understood by Fox, that these guys are not part of your marketing. You could use it if you want, but these guys are investing into production and the overall story world of what I'm creating, because you guys don't understand, this is his words, what the hell I'm talking about. That was a change for us, and we knew then this is when we can start with our own creative properties, because people are starting to understand what the hell we were talking about, as opposed to just putting out a movie. You know, you get a lot of pitches where people go, oh, I see this as comic books, and I see this as a video game, and I see this as this, and toys, and blah, 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 blah. But they don't have that created in such a way that plan is visual in front of you. That's what we do for us, and we do for our clients.
And there's a different kind of creative aspect to this, is that sometimes what we do is immediately impactful on the property we're working on if it's owned by a Hollywood studio or something like that. So we're sitting across from a producer who is working out the second and third acts of his movie script while a movie is being filmed, and we listen to it, and he's asking us, soliciting us for advice on it, and we are actually giving advice that we see reflected in the script as it develops.
While
it is
shooting.
How does
the time travel work in my movie that's being shot right now?
So that's a good thing, but in other ways, we work for a year and a half for a company like Microsoft on Halo, and we don't see the rewards of our work literally until 2, 3, 4 years later, when you know the video games and the novelizations and everything shifts gear towards much more of all of the things we were discussing with them and all of the advice that we were giving them. We worked on Avatar 2008, 2009, I think it is. The majority of the fruits of our efforts that we put into play won't be seen until you see the second, third, fourth movies, whenever the heck they're going to come out. So you know, it's a push-pull a lot of times between, I come from a world where more often than anyone would like, you're writing a comic book script and it's on the shelves a week later. and there's an immediacy to that creative involvement. So there is definitely a frustration a lot of times working on client-related work that it's very different than when you're developing your own original material.
So then, of course, we got that taste in 2002, 2003. We wanted to, we had this proof of concept, as Mark talked about. We wanted to launch our own story worlds, our own transmedia. I mean, in so many ways, everything that we've done has been proof that you can create a story world that's designed to work on different media platforms in different ways. That can be totally immersive and engaging and communal. So we started in recent years to pitch the studios on this sort of thing. And what we came up with, in essence, was what we called the boomerang. Beautiful, gorgeous transmedia story world created in a fantastic pitch Bible with video and things like that that we'll talk about with Chrisula in a minute. We threw it at the Walt Disney Company. It hurled around. They actually paid us. They said, wow, this is amazing. Our rent was covered for a while and so forth. And because nobody knew how to lay claim to it, because big giant corporations are not constructed to be transmedia friendly, it banged around and then came back to us because the option lapsed and we put it back in. We actually did that a couple of times and realized that, you know what, in addition to them taking it, they were going to take it away completely. Because your rights when it comes to a movie studio, they're just given up totally. And if you want to deal with them, especially if you're just breaking in, you may not even be attached to the content anymore. They can take it completely away from you. Your name may or may not show up on screen. So we began to examine the field, and although there was a certain field that was a little behind the times when it came to technological innovations, publishing, we did realize that there was a way to hold on to a lot of your rights. You maintain the copyright when you publish. You have a certain degree of control with books and graphic novels. If they like your idea, they treat you like a human being and let you realize that. And so we decided, in some sense, that publishing was going to be the way to go for us. We created some materials and went out to some publishers with our transmedia concepts. And I'm hoping that Chrisula can talk a little bit about what that material was like that we went out with initially, because it got a lot of attention from the publishers at first.
Well, we originally started doing what we call Bibles, and they were very large binders and with beautiful quality paper that we did in full color. And because these Bibles had so much information and information that we would expand on because transmedia is something that continuously grows. And that's why we decided to use binders, because there was always constant information that you would put on. But we basically designed them so that they would be, you would look at them, they were like coffee table books to make an impression so that they would stick out from anything else that they had seen, and they were very impressive looking. Besides that, we would also do visual presentations as well, because, you know, it was, you know, we would do keynote presentations, we would do the binders, that's what we did for our clients. Now we've got to the point where we've minimized them. They're more like magazines, large magazines. Also in, with spirals, but now we do them in kind of like chapters. So each magazine is one chapter and they expand that way.
So we were, these were impressive presentations, but what was funny was that some of the publishers that we went to there were factions in publishing that said, you know, we have to do something. You know, wood is going away, and we have to become more vested in the intellectual property. But editors, marketing people involved in publishing, they didn't really get it. They didn't understand. A book is a book, isn't it? The future will be simply books on tablets, and that they're just coming around to understanding that. And so we became a little bit frustrated with this notion because we are transmedia. We're not book authors necessarily as a company. We're interested in launching a story world in such a way that it actually involves things like social media, things like webisodes or other media components, apps and such, and that still seem to baffle some of the publishers. Now, about 1,000 miles away, something was being hatched at a division of HarperCollins. Chip, what was on your mind that coalesced into the discussion that we had at the booksellers conference in London?
Yeah, it's just, you know, working within the constraints of what a public company knows how to do. And so I work at a publishing house that makes print books, and then there's a Kindle, so we better make e-books. And then, oh, wait a minute, here's the iPad, perhaps. And, you know, you could buy all the HarperCollins titles on the iPad the day it launched. But they're just books. So then you get scope creep. We better build a TV studio in the office. And so I think sometimes people get confused. Like, if you look at Microsoft's strategy, for instance, in terms of tablets and not making a distinct experience that's supposed to fit in your pocket, be in your hand. And this is, by the way, every device that makes your life better in the last 100 years, except the washing machine, is right in here, and the dishwasher. But everything else is right here, and maybe they'll figure out how you can, you know, wash a dish or something like that. But you know, the companies only know how to do what their P&Ls know how to do. So you have this much money, and then you multiply it times this. You know, you figure out, well, how much does it cost? How many pages is it? What's the wood? What kind of wood are we using? How thick is the paper? How many different colors are made? And then multiply it times a number to make sure that you're profitable so that your shareholders don't revolt. And that's all they know how to do. So it becomes a leader's responsibility to figure out how to drag a couple hundred-year-old business into the future. And and fighting against your own people, your own finance people, and so forth. So in a way that's productive. And so I was actually, we first met at the first Story Worlds 2 years ago, 2.5 years ago or something, which is a transmedia, the first transmedia, really official conference that anybody from Hollywood paid attention to. And then last year, this time of the year, we both spoke, and you know, the panels were then the president of Walt Disney Imagineering, I mean, not the panels, but the presentations, individual presentations, the president of WDI, Damon from Lost, the creator of Lost. So, you know, people are getting it. And then I pitched Allison the idea of the Bible as transmedia, and I did one on that. And then so just hanging out, we were talking about something we might do together and ideated towards something that you'll hear about in the coming weeks. But I think that the trick is to just figure out, as a leader, whatever, if you're a writer or even if you're the publisher, sometimes it's hard to make the company do what's the right thing to do. And so you have to be able to speak the different love languages of the various stakeholders, and you have to be able to define things that people already can understand. And so for me, I thought, okay, well, Zondervan had done a graphic novel before, and we lost, you know, a series, and we lost over $1 million. So you pretty much know that the CFO is going to say, well, we tried that, don't do that. But when you look at what they tried to do, they didn't really respect the genre. But I felt like that was an easy iteration forward. I went to Comic-Con to San Diego once ago and pretended like we had a product. So we hired a real illustrator from the space and we had all the stuff that you'd have for Marcom materials as if you had a real product, but we didn't. And I just wanted to have real conversations. I read comics as a kid. I don't have a ton of comics that I buy as an adult. But I had probably 2,500 conversations with fanboys and fangirls about this idea. And it was a David and Goliath thing. But by page two, everything you remembered from Sunday school was already burned in this literary property. So, but there's a lot that happens there that just wasn't in the coloring book that you had as a kid, right? And so that got some attention from people in this space who are part of the 78.4% that are self-described Christians, and some property started to come to us. So you saw, I don't know if you've seen Book of Revelation, which came out about 10 months ago, and it sold in 1 month what my finance people would demand it would sell in a year. And it's hard to find it at the typical places that Christian propaganda sells. We just released on Wednesday the first of seven series, a series called Messiah, and the first one's Origin. And we had a lot more cool title. And the Walmart buyer said, oh, well, it's too cool. It's not clear enough. The NASCAR people won't buy it. So we made it a little more on the nose. And so that's, you know, a few days old. So if you like the idea that we're putting money in these things, I encourage you to buy it, you know, and then vote with your wallet. We'll make more of them.
Chip, religious or not, what's in it for you as a publisher, and what's in it for publishers in general to make a commitment to a multi-platform launch of an intellectual property? Why would you do that as opposed to simply putting just a graphic novel out or just a prose fiction novel out?
Well, first, because I'm also a consumer, you know, and CEO, I'm also the Hair Club president. So I think as a consumer first, and having worked in a variety of media, I know how to do movies better than I know how to make books, quite frankly. And so you have, I think most people don't write a script anyway. They have a vision. So what I'm responsible for and what tools I have, I can green light a part of the vision, whether it's my own or a partner's or whatever. And so we're not making graphic novels. We're making like the first iteration of a future story world. And so that's the idea of what part can we control? How can you get this thing out of the nest and start to show people? Because everybody wants to get on the bandwagon once something works, right? Which is why we get four tornado movies and all that other stuff.
But how is it benefiting you from a business standpoint? Because obviously it's one thing to be a fan, but to greenlight something that's going to cost extra money because you're using different platforms to communicate it, why would you do that?
Well, you know, we can spend money on marketing, to your point, the frustration you guys had, or we can, this is what Hot Wheels said, right? I mean, it's the going back to having a movie that's got your Lucasfilm toys in it. So the belief is that if we can make our money back and get this thing out of the nest and start to see a pervasive story world take hold, then someday at a Comic-Con people will be walking around dressed like the stuff that's in our books. So it becomes, you know, eventually, I think, I mean, you know, if I look at these 78.4% of people that are self-described Christians, there was no, Jesus never had a marketing budget. And yet one out of three people on earth are in his company, if you will, right? It's because he gave away free content that people were interested in. And so if you were blind, he didn't, like, teach you a different thing. He cured your blindness. So whatever is in the zeitgeist at any given moment, if you can deliver it for people, people want to be associated with something bigger. They want to be associated with brands. That's why there's T-shirt stands all over out there. And so the idea is then to have a commercial that is in the content, and that you essentially, if you do things well, you really, marketing budgets can go away because you just have all this ecosystem of brand experiences that people want to support, and so they vote with their wallet.
And the precedent that is being set in these kinds of transmedia publishing deals is that, yes, the publisher will need to spend a little bit of extra money to make sure that your story world, that it's not just advertising, that it's rich content, that it's content that engages directly with the reader so that they feel a part of the story world in some way. But the publisher is benefiting a little more than usual from it. They become a kind of partner, and share equity in the story world. So it's a little bit more of a partnership. These contracts, these transmedia contracts, are now being established. By the way, it's one of the reasons why we're users of the word transmedia. Some people don't like the word for whatever reason, but the use of the word has a precedent legally now that will allow you to have contracts that grant these kinds of more elaborate story world agreements and implementations for you, and that's magnificent. It means that that we will be able to carefully organize and market our story worlds to publishers, and publishers will be able to make that consideration and go, you know what, although book sales in hard copy format are declining, we're actually going to have greater equity in the intellectual property itself, because we're going to spend more, engage readers on more platforms, and see to it that the story world grows larger and larger. So that's the premise that we're operating under. I'd love for you guys to ask questions so that we're addressing your actual concerns.
Can we introduce Darren?
Oh, I'm sorry.
Bye, Blake.
Darren Sanchez is... go ahead, introduce yourself.
I'm the production director at Starlight Runner. I work closely with everyone on this panel, so I'm also an exhibitor out there, so that's why I was late. hi. I was a vice president at Wizard Entertainment for about 10 years. I also worked with Jeff and Priscilla at Valiant, and then later with Fabian at Valiant back in the early and mid-90s. So got together a few years
ago. You had a question.
Yes, I'm developing a new eco-spiritual superhero property, and my materials are more traditional. Like, I have a screenplay and treatment, a synopsis for a quadrilogy. But I was interested in your Bible. Is there anything specific that you can mention that you put in there that made people interested in your project as a transmedia project?
Well, the Bible really is you know, it's broken down to many pieces. We have basically the world and locations, and then we have characters. Each individual character, we have aspects of the world, like things that are important to that world, and we break those down. And then we do basically, I don't know how much can I tell.
They are available as consultants as well.
Yes, you can hire us. No.
I don't know if I can afford that.
But the main thing is that, you know, You need to have a good story, because no matter what you put in there, if the story is not solid, it's not going to work. So look at your story and break it down.
Here's my personal recommendation about transmedia, because you don't necessarily want to lead with transmedia, because the term is unfamiliar, people get a little weird. There's a kind of Dungeons and Dragons association with these very elaborate story worlds. Our recommendation is never just say, oh, and by the way, this property works as an app, a comic, a video game, like a list with bullet points. No. you have to be able to convey in the back of your document, not up front, but in the back, and by the way, this world is designed in such a way that it can operate this way as a comic book, and then use some of the terminology that comic book creators might use. And if you don't know it, find someone who does.
So I would pitch it in a primary medium, and then at the back, I would say it's also...
Sure. If you're going to a publisher, you know, it's a novel.
You've got to speak the language of whoever you're talking to.
Yeah,
exactly. Unless you're the president of the studio.
Everything has a core platform, no matter what it is. Whether it's a toy car, or whether it's a feature film, or whether it's a video game, there's a core platform, and that's generally the person buying the product, the story idea, or whatever, has their own core platform they're most interested in.
Would you adjust for each platform?
Yes,
you have to adjust it for each platform.
You know, like when you had to, you'd like
tweak your resume. You really need a job, and so, well, you have to have experience with shoes, so let me think. I've worn shoes. Right. It's that. You just have to speak the language who you're talking to, unless you know all four or five stakeholders, and you're going to bring them, you know, to the Ivy, or to Tavern on the Green, or, you know, wherever you go these days here.
Thank you.
Sure. Yeah.
For someone who's developing a property, sitting at home in their computer, creating something, would they come to you? What would be your advice for them? Would they come to you with their own version of a Bible, or should they go to an agent first to get representation and then go to publishers who won't even see people without an agent? What would be the process? You can see things like Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles where they do something on a shoestring and in the very initial stages get traction with the idea concept and then it goes forward. Or is it like a car is where you come and somebody creates the entire package in a very highly polished
To be honest, when you're developing a transmedia world that you would like to get published, that's a significant investment for whomever gets involved. So, first of all, it's good to establish a little bit of a track record for yourself. If you come out of nowhere with a very elaborate thing that people have to spend a lot of money on, that's a big gamble for whomever is involved. So it's good to get published. It's good to make a presence for yourself on the web with blogs and things like that. But when you're creating your materials, be sure that they're crystal clear, and do not denote the fact that you're dumping a filing cabinet full of information on your story world. One of the things we ran into ourselves early on was that we were so enthusiastic about our worlds, we would put these giant Bibles in front of people and go, look at this world. And they'd run screaming because it's too much. It gets overwhelming.
A pitch really should not be more than 2 pages. And that includes
the initial.
Two pages with, you know, some artwork. The artwork really needs to be spectacular. Otherwise, you can actually lose a pitch if the artwork is not good. Sometimes it's only better to have just the story instead of, you know, if you have really good designs, then that's fine. But no more than 2 pages.
The other aspect of it is you really shouldn't be trying to sell a story world. Honestly, you should be trying to sell a story. And whoever you choose that you should be selling that story to from a platform standpoint, then you ensure yourself and them that the story world accommodates that story in a grander way. So if you have an idea, your idea shouldn't be for a story world, because there's no one buying story world in pub, you know, not yet anyway.
Well, I'd give you two really specific things. One is there's plenty of books about how to break into Hollywood or whatever you want to call it. And so maybe there's a different one for comics versus film versus TV, but essentially you want to do a query letter to agents who will accept new submissions and get an agent, because it's only for legal reasons that people don't want to look at your stuff, and the fact that they've got too much on their desk already, right? So that's the traditional path, which is still very doable. And so there are maybe 10 or 20% of the agents that can get through the door will look at new material. And you do a query letter, and there's books about all how to do all that. The other one, and, you know, we're not sending this up the food chain to my CEO here in New York, are we? But self-publishing, right? So there's the only thing that you can do that doesn't rely on anybody else. There's no barrier between you and your success if you can write. So write. And whether it's a blog or whether it's a book or whether it's a YA fiction or whatever it is, when you show somebody that people want to go to where there's heat. So if you believe in it, know your story world so you don't disobey your own rules. But start working and start getting a tribe. And then two people is more than zero. And two they have friends in their social network. So now you're at 20, and then you're 200, and then you're 2,000. And then somebody will, when you do your query letter, you can say, hey, here's the vision, and here's my platform. And you can start smaller and get in the game.
As a kind of addendum to that, we have to keep in mind that the whole communications field has changed. We are, in essence, now capable, as storytellers, of looking into the eyes in a certain way of our audience. And we have to keep that in mind. It is the fastest way to engender loyalty by giving your readers the impression that you are actually interested in their feedback and that you can establish a dialogue with them. In this day and age, we have a generation growing up that is really appreciating being listened to. So as authors, if we do listen, you're going to establish a connection that is unusual, and that when we feel heard, we call our friends. We say, hey, look at this. This thing is responding to me. It's going to respond to you. Let's all join this. And that's really, really important.
I have one more thing to say. Uh-huh. When you do get that meeting with the Hollywood agent or the studio, and you pitch your idea to them, and you're all excited and passionate, and they listen to you, they're going to say, okay, that's great. What else do you have? You know, they want to make sure that you're a pro and that you have more than just one idea.
That's important, yes. Last couple of questions. Yeah.
How do you copyright a transmedia idea?
The way you would copyright, I think that's pretty easy, the way you would copyright anything, which is to document it and file for copyright, okay? Remember that a copyright is not the same thing as a trademark. And so if you have a title, you can't trademark a title. You'd have to create a logo and trade dress to actually trademark that. So yes, assemble what it is that you're working on into some form of document and actually
put it in an envelope. It's like $20. That's the one thing that it's probably not shut down right now.
We'll probably get that done pretty easy.
Right behind.
Yeah. So Marvel, for example, seemed to be, you know, trendy.
Yeah.
And so do you perceive it as such that what value do you think you contribute that might in a way be different from that? I mean, that's a pretty good model of.
It is if you have infinite amounts of money.
but
it is. The Marvel Cinematic Universe, sure.
So why isn't transmedia just an Excel spreadsheet?
Why isn't? Is that the question?
Yeah.
I don't know if I can answer that question, but I will say my observation is that Marvel did what academically we're talking about. Right? DC could have done it. Anybody out there could have done it. But the CEO that was in power and the team that was leading that company had a vision, and they executed against the vision, and they built it. And so you have rights sitting over at Sony, and you know that's you guys are on that payroll, I think. But yep. Spidey is like every street out there last night had the big lights and all that. So, but they got it. And you know the power of brands is Disney paid $4 billion for that. They paid $4 billion for Lucas. They paid $4 billion for Pixar. So there's people who get it, and so now all the other people, like you're saying, are waking up. They're watching it, and what you know, it's just like saying we're going to be like Apple and have putting more white space in your ads. It's not what you see; it's what's in the show bible.
Talk about, Fabe, the distinction between a spreadsheet, multi-platform, and transmedia expression.
The truth is that the Marvel Cinematic Universe has been very well done cohesively as a feature film franchise of shared characters that's now spinning into TV with one TV show, but it's not a true shared story world from a transmedia standpoint because their storylines, characters are contradicted across different platforms. So the comic publishing is not the same as the feature film. The animation that they're currently doing is not the same as the comics publishing or the feature film. So it's not an Excel spreadsheet because it has 50 years of publishing history behind it, more than that if you count some of the other characters, that make it very, very difficult to allow it to be a cohesive transmedia story world.
Your position is that story worlds are cohesive across media, and that
generally,
and
yes,
what's
yes.
not being done is that there are worlds out there that are all helter-skelter of what could happen, marketing opportunity.
It's very understandable why there are helter-skelter worlds out there. Star Wars was created pretty much by one man, and that became helter-skelter real quickly when it's its extensions went beyond the ability of one man to control, even with a multi-billion-dollar company in his hands. So we're saying that when we're creating, right, or working with a client, we are trying to help them make their story world as cohesive as possible within the context of whatever constraints they have. And we're trying to make our own original ideas as coherent as possible across storytelling on different platforms to the best of our ability that we can, until such a point when it sells and it starts to have other things happening. Then you try to control it after the fact as well.
And there's the academic, right? There's the purist version, and then there's reality. And so essentially you're trying to turn around a bunch of barges like they're speedboats. And you can't do that, right? People aren't going to go, well, we just made $1 billion. Well, why would we change it?
Perhaps the last word on this, and people, we're running out of time, so we're going to just step right outside and keep answering questions right outside the thing here. But what's going to happen next, mark my words, is that we're going to see the rise of transmedia storytellers, artists who... because we have been raised in a multi-platform world, we'll envision our storytelling in an artistic way to manifest on these platforms in concert, so that you'll have these kind of symphonic narratives that reach and immerse people in story in a way that is truly designed from scratch to do so. And those experiences have not quite happened yet. When they do, they're going to be awesome. And I'm hoping that some of you can be a part of that. Some of you can actually originate that. People, thank you so much. We are out of time, but we're going to go right outside.